Councilmember Garris.
Here.
Councilmember Edwardson.
Here.
O'Brien.
Here.
Lundberg.
Here.
Larson's excused for personal reasons. Lawler.
Here.
Dorrance.
Here.
Schwab.
Here.
And Dodge.
Here.
Hey, is Pastor Cota here?
Yeah, okay.
Leave us some prayer, please.
Before I pray, I just want to say thank you, council members, for allowing prayer at this meeting. Let's pray. Father God, I thank you for this night. And Lord, those who have been given leadership in this city, we ask that you give them wisdom at the same time. Lord, we know that we have great responsibility to care for the citizens of this great city. Give them wisdom and understanding. And Lord, for this meeting, we pray that you would guide it. And Lord, we also pray for tonight our law enforcement, that you continue to protect them as they are out providing and protecting our city. Keep them safe, give them wisdom as they deal with many things. And Lord, we thank you for this time to care for those people who are in need, care for those people who have gain, whatever, we want to serve them. This I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, does any member have any conflicts of interest on the agenda items this evening? Hearing none, we'll go ahead with public appearances. If you have a public appearance, please come to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and try to keep your comments to 3 minutes, please.
I don't know if I can talk that fast, but I'll try.
And cut something out.
I'm certain you can't.
Bruce Willers, 529 North Main Street. Rice Lake, Wisconsin. To the city council members and the mayor, as you all may be aware of from the TV station WEAU-TV informing us of the massive electrical fire at 920 Main Street, Rice Lake, Wisconsin last night. I'm being sarcastic. This wasn't a structural fire either, as reported by the TV station or by whom sent this information to them. In fact, the initial fire was determined to be thought an electrical fire, which ignited household items such as clothing and bedding contained in the corner of the basement. Now that we have that out of the way, let's go to the truth. Fact one, 911 was called at 12:11 a.m. in the morning. Fact number two, the fire department arrived on the scene approximately at 12:20 a.m., which is a 9-minute response across town. The electric department arrived at 12:28 a.m. Fact number four, the electrical and burning clothes caused smoke damage to the structure of the building. Fact five, the smoke alarms did their job and alerted the family to vacate the home, and they called 911, not by somebody else driving by. Fact six, that the two fire personnel made it safely to the fire residence, pulled out the knockdown hoses and said to the owner, "We are sorry, we cannot go in until a third person arrives." This is a judgment call, according to the fire chief. They can most certainly start fighting a fire or a potential fire, or maybe just hooking up the hoses to the hydrants if need be. So I ask you as a taxpayer tonight to reassure the public that your city administrator, your fire chief, has been directed by you that they call for mutual aid every fire immediately so that we can assure the public that they will be safe. If our fire department can't do their job with the funds and the personnel allocated, then we need to call on our neighbors to assist for mutual aid and for our fire protection. In closing, I want to leave you with the motion that Alderperson Dan Lawler made during budget hearings. The motion read to some effect like this. I make a motion to build a new fire hall behind the Walgreens facility and to hire 6 full-time fire personnel so that we really can be safe. And if it saves one life, no matter what the cost to the public, it's worth it. In the words of Alderperson Lundberg, when they call 911, they don't care what it costs. They just want help. Sadly, you voted it down by majority. When you go home tonight in your home that isn't smoke-filled, like their home is, and they now go to the motel and sleep night after night, which they're not elected to do, shame on the people that allowed this to happen, whomever they are. Thank you, Bruce Willers.
Thank you, Bruce. Anybody else for public appearances, please?
My name is Bill Smith. I reside at 1441 21st Avenue in the town of Stanfold, but I also own a business and a building at 34 North Main in Rice Lake. I'm here on a positive note to thank the mayor, the city, the Chief Rue, Jim Anderson from the street department about the cooperation that we received on this year's Aquafest. It was a challenging situation we were facing to have us remain in the entertainment area that we've been at for approximately 20 years. But every department stepped forward and helped us in a very great manner. And I just publicly want to thank them.
Thanks, Bill.
Steve Brown, 23 Highland Street, Rice Lake, Wisconsin. Since the last meeting on May the 28th, the decibel readings on the 28th were at 11 o'clock, were 54 to 60 decibels coming out of Birchwood Manufacturing. That's twice as loud as it should be. There was also a major soot and dust incident that lasted approximately 26 hours. I called the phone number that you guys gave me at the last meeting, and I left a message. No response from Birchwood Manufacturing, still no response. And I slept on the couch with earplugs. Sunday, June the 2nd, decibel readings at 8 o'clock in the morning. This is on Sunday morning. They were 58 to 59 decibels. And I do believe we have an ordinance, a noise ordinance in town, restricting noise during the church services. Also, there was a yellow-tinted smoke all day long, and slept on the couch with earplugs again. June the 3rd, decibel readings at 1:13 in the morning, 56 to 88. Another dust and soot incident. Reported that to the DNR. Slept on the couch with earplugs again. June the 6th, soot and dust plume at dusk. Soot and dust visible in flashlight beams. June the 7th, we know what night that was. That was Thursday night Chris Cruzy was playing. It was a great show. But while the show was going on, there was a major soot and dust incident happening at the same time. The Aquafest crowd was exposed to all that particulate matter and the soot. Those emissions lasted till at least 3 a.m. I gave up at 3. I had to go to bed. I had guests at the house on the 8th or on the 7th that were complaining of sore throats. On the 8th, we had a dust and soot continuing, soot and dust falling on the neighbors. Well, let me tell you the story. Paul and I were down at the Wicked Whisk having a cup of coffee and a muffin, sitting outside watching. All of a sudden, the soot and dust is falling on Paul's white plate. It's disgusting. Paul called Birchwood, and their response to him was, "How do you know it was us? We're watching the smoke come down the street from their stacks." Dead giveaway. Slept on the couch that night with earplugs too, fellas. June the 11th. Boy, that's today. Got woke up at 3 o'clock this morning. Decibel readings were anywhere from 59 to 66. There were times louder than that, and it's basically three times louder than it should be anyways. At times, it was almost 60 decibels inside my house upstairs. 60 decibels, guys, that's a lot. I called the number again that you guys provided me at the last meeting, and still no response. I tried to get back to sleep but couldn't. You know, it was just impossible, so I've been going on no sleep at all. What's that tell us about our neighbors? You know, how long are we going to have to listen to their excuses, and how much more evidence are we going to need to stop this behavior? Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Steve. Yep. Anybody else for public appearances, please? One last time. Anybody else for public appearances? Okay, public appearances time is closed. Kathy, we're going to have a public hearing on the weights and measures.
Sorry, I didn't have this open yet. I apologize. This is the annual weights and measures device public hearing that's required by our city ordinance. State statute says municipalities our size have some options. We can either establish a weights and measures device department or a weights and measures department, which would mean inspectors go out and inspect the sites that have the devices, or we can contract with the state, which we've done at least since 1992. In 2002, the city adopted an ordinance that allowed the city to assess the covered businesses for the annual fee, which right now is a little under $7,000 a year. Prior to that, the $7,000 was absorbed as part of the tax levy. And only the businesses that have devices are involved in any of the fees, the licenses, or this public hearing. Oh, weights and measures devices by state guidelines, there's many types of devices. The scales that are at the checkouts that will weigh your bananas, the scales that are in the meat department that will weigh up a pound of hamburger for you, the scales that are at the produce departments that give you an estimated weight, those do not qualify. A fuel nozzle, so if you go to a gas station and there's choices for fuel grades, each of those grades is a device, whether it comes out of the same nozzle or whether there's three or four separate nozzles. And what the state does is they actually come and they'll dispense a gallon and make sure the fuel is actually billed out at a gallon. A network cash system, cash register, so if a business has eight different registers and you can take your product to any of those registers and purchase it, that's one system. In a standalone system, so if you have one business that might have two different registers and you have to take product A to this one and product B to this register, which is pretty rare in Rice Lake, those would be two separate systems. And each laundromat, washer and dryer, because those are time devices. So you set the public hearing in end of March, early April. All of those license holders that were on that list receive a notice of this meeting and the listing of all of the businesses that have the number of devices that have been self-declared. And anyone that would wanted to could submit comments to City Hall. I have not received any verbal or written comments. And you can look at the list that was in your packet, and you can amend that as you see fit. So the recommendation is to adopt the list that was included in your packet with a per-device fee of $12.20 a device. Upon your approval, the clerk's office will invoice those businesses. You can amend the schedule as you see fit or take any other action. And my recommendation is option one, which is the approve the list that's submitted. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Kathy at this time?
Yeah, how is the 1220 calculated? What does that include?
That takes into account the state contract, which is roughly $7,000, and all of the number of devices in the city that are declared. It's just a simple division. We take all the devices, divide it into the amount that we pay the state, and we come up. Every year it varies because some businesses come, some businesses go. So, for instance, if there was a large grocery store in town that had, let's say, 20 devices, scales, that device fee, of course, would go down slightly because we'd have 20 more devices to spread that $7,000 out to.
And that fee doesn't recover any of the costs of your department or internal functions of administering this?
Good question, because I failed to mention that. We have a $25 license fee. That's annual. So that covers the process of us issuing the license and the administration part of it. The device fee is strictly recovering the state fee.
So you are recovering your costs as well as the state fees. So.
And if you're ever interested, I do get a state report, and they show which businesses they randomly selected and visited and which devices they tested and if they've passed or failed. And if they fail, they have X many days that the state gives them to correct, and then they come and retest that device. So there are some checks and balances to the system.
Anybody else with questions for Kathy? Okay, we're going to hold a public hearing. So any citizens that would like to speak in favor of the ordinance or the assessment for the weight measures device? Citizens for. Any citizens for? One last time, citizens for. Citizens that would like to speak against it? Citizens against? One last time, citizens against. Hearing no public input, look for council action on the weights and measures.
I would make a motion that we would approve option one.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the July 2018 to June 2019 weight and measures assessment schedule as presented with a $12.20 per device fee. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Brien.
Yes.
Lundberg.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Lawrence.
Yes.
Trump.
Yes.
Dodge.
Yes.
Edwardson.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries. Next item up is the consent agenda. Is there any items off the consent agenda that somebody would like to pull down?
M.
A, please.
A?
A.
A. Yep. Thank you.
I and L.
Anybody else? Okay, I look for a motion to approve the consent agenda except for items I, K, L, and M.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda except for items I, K, L, and M. Roll call, please.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed the maker of the motion.
Who made the motion?
Yes.
Mr. Lawler.
Councilmember Lundberg.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Dorns.
Yes.
Schwab.
Yes.
Dodge.
Yes.
Edwardson.
Yes.
And O'Brien.
Yes.
Okay, that item's approved. 4I is the Northwest Hazard Materials Response Team Task Force contract renewal. Did you pull that?
I did.
Mr. Dodge, go ahead.
Chief, I was just wondering if you could explain to the city council or even the audience or the constituents on the TV on how do we get paid when we provide this service for the city or the surrounding area that we cover?
Okay. Under the contract with the state of Wisconsin, there is a clause in there. Kathy, if you could go, and I don't have one in front of me.
That's fine.
That's going to be in the attachment. Keep going. Keep going. Ooh. Scroll Yeah. Let me see if I can do this while she's searching. There is a section in the contract. Let me see if I have it in the brief. Section 4.3, 4.6, and 4.7. It outlines the procedure for reimbursement. We are, the city is to submit a reasonable cost invoice that goes through Kathy's office. That's submitted. We have a few attempts to make, and if not, that gets turned over to the state of Wisconsin. They pursue the recovery. The city will be in reimbursed. There's a special fund set up by the state that will reimburse the team if the cost cannot be reimbursed. So that's the reimbursement phase portion of it. That's federal law. Any fire department can seek reimbursement for responses to a release of hazardous materials. So we're doing it as the representative of the state. We have the state's liability, immunity protection, the entire nine yards with this. So the city really is not on the hook for anything should a response occur.
And then we are paid at a per case basis?
Yes. So if you have a response, if you'd have two responses a year, you're going to get two reimbursements. That's why later on this year you'll see a request for the renewal of county team. We have two teams making a hazmat program in the city. You're about $40,000 a year. It pays for itself. But it's based upon the invoice and fee structure that the local emergency planning committee has approved, which is by statute, and we submit the bill. We've never been turned down for an invoice because our costs are reasonable. Okay. So we've never been challenged that way, and I don't anticipate that at any time.
How many firefighters do you have that are hazmat approved?
14 technicians, and okay. The rest are hazmat operations level.
Okay. I know we're classified as a level two.
Level three.
Level three. Correct. We get how much money from the state?
Approximately $14,000 a year.
Is there a reason why we're not a level four?
We are also a level four.
Okay.
The level four is the county or the local team. Okay. Level three is your state type three. The next one up is a type two and a type one. And I'll just kind of give you a brief synopsis of what a type three, two, and one is. Type three is you're authorized to respond and make entry when there is a known chemical. So let's just say, example, we go to the turkey store. They use anhydrous ammonia. Yep. We know that's a known chemical. So we're good and clear there. We may request through the state additional resources from Eau Claire in Chippewa Falls. That's the next closest.
Mm-hmm.
If they are unable to respond due to staffing or another incident, the state will reassign another team to assist us. We're only required under this to send five people out initially. So it's not a huge drain on manpower, and we have time to assemble those resources and send them out. So that, again, has not been an issue. The type two is the same as a type three, except they have more personnel. Of course, their payment from the state will go up to compensate for the additional personnel. Their equipment inventory is a little bit higher than the type three, mm-hmm. but that's due to the fact they are authorized to go into unknown chemical environments.
Okay.
The type one, there's only two in the state. One is Milwaukee, and the other one is a combination team out of Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls. And those are our designated state teams to respond to a confirmed or suspected terrorist event.
Okay.
So there are only two in the state. There used to be eight. And through this poll process in 2013, they whittled that number down and done a more regional concept versus everything all over the state. So it's a more regional concept, which is working out well.
Okay. So when you're called out by the state, correct?
That is correct. We have to have an authorization number before we can respond.
When the state calls, is it the firefighters that are on duty, or is it firefighters that are called in to go out on a hazmat call? And what I'm trying to get to is when the firefighters leave the hall, who replaces them if we leave it empty?
It's a combination of both.
Okay.
And the personnel that are off duty and are recalled are also reimbursed. Those costs are also reimbursed.
Good enough. That's what I needed, Chief.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else on this issue?
Make a motion we approve the hazardous materials response team task force contract renewal.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the Northwest Hazardous Materials Response Team contract. Any final discussion? Roll call.
Councilmember Lawler?
Yes.
Dorrance?
Yes.
Schwab?
Yes.
Dodge?
Yes.
Edwardson?
Yes.
O'Brien?
Yes.
And Lundberg?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion's approved. All right. Item 4K is a street use permit for Benjamin House Emergency Shelter. I forget where it came from. Okay, go ahead.
You want to know what food trucks are going to be there, don't you?
That would be really nice. Yeah. No, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about what you have going on there, and so if you
awesome.
Just want to, yeah.
All right, great.
Thank you. Yep.
I'm Lori Bowman. I'm the executive director at Benjamin's House, and this will be our second year for our street eats. We did request to shut down Marshall Street. We did that last year, and we had huge success. We had over 1,500 people that came downtown to enjoy the festivities that day. We shut down the street from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. We had no issues during that time and had a lot of success and raised money for the shelter to support that entity. So, questions?
Any questions for Lori?
I just want to, I know a lot of people put a lot of work into it, including yourself, and I was there milling around watching what was going on. I thought it was really it looked like everybody was having a lot of fun, and even though it was pretty sweltering that day, but,
right.
but it looks like everybody was having a lot of fun, and it was well attended, so thanks a lot for your hard work for the community.
Thank you, and I appreciate the city supporting this as well.
I look for action on item 4K, please.
Make a motion to support the street use permit for the Benjamin House.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the street use permit for Benjamin House for September 14th. Any final discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Dorns.
Yes.
Schwab.
Yes.
Dodge.
Yes.
Edwardson.
Yes.
O'Brien.
Yes.
Lundberg.
Yes.
And Lawler.
Yes.
Okay, that motion is approved. Item 4L is IECM, base wage adjustments.
I brought that one up, Your Honor. I don't know if this is the appropriate time to speak about this one because it includes wages, I do believe. Okay. And I don't know if we discussed this in closed session or not, but I think the policy is that there was a pay raise involved in this.
Arnie, is there any reason why we should?
Well, there's really, unless you're talking about competency or something of the.
Nope.
Yeah. Then we're okay.
Wages are okay.
Yeah.
Right. Public information.
I was just wondering why we have a policy, and we put the policy for 4 years for the person to learn this position, the budget crunch that we're in, and deviating from that, in which I read the memo, it says we've deviated from it before. And I just think we should stand our ground and leave the policy as is.
You talked about this at personnel negotiation. Do you want to explain it?
When you talk about policy, you think it's the, if I could get a clarification, do you believe it's a policy that new employees in a position are just usually in orientation for 4 years? Is that where you were going with this?
That's where I was going. That's how I kind of read it.
Okay. The personnel policy says an employee is on orientation for the first year. If the first year is not successful, it can be extended. This was the first time ever that an employee was moved into a new position and was automatically, the council put that employee in a longer orientation than the policy. So this was a deviation of the policy by putting that employee in 4 years. Did that clarify?
That clarifies.
Okay.
And I think the other, I understand the young lady that has this position, mm-hmm. has the education, has fulfilled her obligation on learning the processes, and
correct.
You feel that she should be.
It's my recommendation that I gave to the PNC and I will to the Common Council that
okay.
before your orientation be dropped, that she successfully has completed at least 1 year orientation, and that component should be removed from her position.
Okay. Thank you.
And the PNC also met and discussed this.
Yeah, she's more than done her her training or whatever you want. I'll make a motion. We approve the, it's option, which one is it, Kathy? Option one, option A. It's basically to take her out of the, to recommend to the Common Council remove the extended orientation period of Shannon Breed, Deputy Clerk Treasurer, effective January 1st, 2019, and approve the January 1st, 2019 base wage adjustment to $31.34 an hour. And basically, that's taking her and putting her at her at the full salary that the position warrants.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt option one. This is part of the consent agenda to approve the PNC's recommendation on the remove the extended orientation wage or period on Shannon Breed's clerk treasurer. Any final discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Schwab.
Yes.
Dodge.
No.
Edwardson.
Yes.
O'Brien.
Yes.
Lundberg.
Yes.
Lawler.
Yes.
And Dorns.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries. And the final item on the consent agenda that was pulled down was a bid award for 326 South Main Street water relocation.
Yeah, we talked about this at finance, and I asked these guys just to go over this briefly so people on the council and the people watching kind of understand what came about with this item.
Sure. Well, back on February 27th of 2018, the council approved a developer's agreement with Eric Butler doing business as Atlas Development. That was on the purchase of the building at 326 South Main Street. That project was brought to you about a month ago, and we put together, SEH put together some bid specs. That was approved, and the project was let for bid. And last month, we opened the bid tabs for the project, and we've seen that the project was $107,000 was the low bid from DeSantis Excavating. It was about $34,000 over our estimate. The estimate was based on this project being put together with East Douglas and East Eau Claire Street and possibly the Farm and Fleet entrance. Well, when you pull those other projects out, you lose your economy of scale. And these projects came in quite high. And after talking with Dan here, basically it was the mobilization fees. I think there's three mobilizations on this project.
Well, there's three items, the traffic control, mobilization, and Common X, which were the ones that...
So those kind of came up to where the extra mobilizations, the higher cost was basically because these were standalone project. So the analysis. I guess the issue is before the council whether to accept the low bid from DeSantis Excavating and $407,000. SEH, the project was previously based on the developer's agreement and a budget of $73,000, so we are talking a $34,000 overrun. When this was brought to you last month before we let it for bid, we check in the budget book, and I stated that it was on, I think it was page, a certain page of the budget for... for $73,000 is shown on page 121. This was incorrect. This was in the TID project for the engineering fee. It was stated as 326. It probably should have been stated as 910 South Wisconsin, engineering for 910 South Wisconsin. So it didn't get put into the TID 3 budget. It wouldn't have changed the outcome. The only thing is that Kurt had presented to you that the TID was going to be, you know, out of debt, basically. We wouldn't be running a negative fund balance at the end of this year, but this would put us behind again. We have a contractual obligation with Atlas Development to get this water main installed. So at this point, I guess I see no other option but to approve this project and move forward.
Any questions for Jim?
When does Atlas Development plan on breaking ground or reconstructing the old street department?
As soon as we get that water line installed, then I think Arnie and them will sign the developer's agreement or the sale.
We haven't closed on the sale of the property. He wants to wait for the water main approval.
Is it contingent upon?
Sort of.
Do we have to have that water main?
Well, we need to do it. So.
Okay.
Okay.
There's no set closing date.
Okay. Yeah, it's part of the developer's agreement, so we're contract, we're based on the contract we sign with them,
So we grab $32,000 somewhere.
It'd be, Kathy can speak on this, but we've done this in the past, just an inter-fund loan. One
still TID. Come out of TID 3, but it'll take another year really to pay for it out of TID 3. So what they do is they just take some excess money from, kind of float it from fund to fund and then pay it back. And they've done that other times as well. Okay. This isn't first.
Some of you, if I may, Your Honor, some of you may have remembered, and we'll have an audit presentation for 18, but there have been times when the auditors have presented the an annual audit and one fund may be a negative balance. And when that happens, it's usually short term, and it also accrues negative interest. So there is no investment interest allocated to that fund because it has a negative balance. So, but as far as a detriment to the city in general, no, because other funds carry that account. And we would still continue to book expenses to that account, and the negative fund balance will just run until at which time it works its way out. Similar to, if you remember, Fund 85, our health insurance program was in a negative fund balance. That happens quite frequently in special revenue funds, so this is not something that's unique to a TID especially.
Thank you.
Jim, if we were to postpone this until the East Douglas Street and Eau Claire was being done in 2020, do you think the cost would be less?
The cost, because of the economy of scale, it might be, but then we wouldn't be able to close on the sale of the building.
But in my opinion, I don't think they're ready to buy anyway.
You don't think the buyer is?
No.
He has said that he'll close after the farming.
We have clear title of that property?
We will have.
What are we waiting for? No, we have clear title to sell the property.
We haven't had a current title evidence.
Okay, so right now we don't know if we have clear title
that
property.
Well, we expect that we do because we did have a preliminary title report done.
All right. Anybody else? Okay.
I make a motion we approve the low bid of DeSantis for $107,000. To take care of the water main at 326.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the low bid of $107,092.50 for the water main work at 326 South Main Street. Any final discussion? Roll call.
Councilmember Dodge.
No.
Edwardson.
Yes.
O'Brien.
Yes.
Lundberg.
Yes.
Waller.
Yes.
Thorns.
Yes.
Schwab.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries. First item under consideration is a report from Susan Lindham from the DNR in regards to the Bertrand manufacturing situation. Susan?
I'm Susan Lindham. I work for the Department of Natural Resources Air Management Program out of the Eau Claire office. I'm the supervisor for kind of the northwestern part of the state. We cover about 23 counties in the slice on the western part of the state. So I'm here at the invitation of the mayor, and to help me frame what you want to know, what the department can do to be helpful in the situation with Birchwood. If I could be so bold, I'd like to ask the council a question, and that would be, what's the desired outcome here? So I know the department's received many complaints, particularly in the last year. It seems that the situation with particulates it specifically has been escalating, and what is the council looking for? How can I I help address some of your questions.
Well, I guess it's been going on actually for 2 years.
Okay.
Probably since June of 2018 or 17 when they had there was a equipment damaged in a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny, well, not the funny part, but the part of, that's kind of that's confusing or frustrating is before that there wasn't really, this issue didn't exist.
Okay.
And since then it's gotten worse and worse and nothing's happened. So I guess some questions for you, you know, what can we do to fix this problem? They, you, if I understand correctly, issue to them an air permit that allows them to run their boilers, run their business.
Correct, yeah.
Is that a yearly permit?
We issue for the size sources that Birchwood's considered a minor source. So we issue them an operation permit. Those are renewable every 5 years. It's up to the applicant to submit the application within that five-year period, and then the department acts on that as we have resources.
And when does their current permit expire?
So their current permit is was dated in 2010. So their last permit was issued in 2010. So they have submitted a renewal application, and the department has not acted on their renewal application.
So
they have a valid, the permit they have is valid.
Well, so it never expires? I mean,
it does expire, but it's up to the way that this process works is as long as they submit a timely application, then it's in our court. It's in the state's court to process that application as we have resources.
So they operate, they continue to operate under the existing contract until you decide whether or not you're going to renew the
We're obligated to renew the permit by law. And
so
which we, that is what, well, so that's the reason for my question to you.
Yeah.
I can explain the tools that we have and how we can help work with Birchwood to alleviate this. And you're mentioning one of those tools. So what the DNR Air program does is we issue permits. We review, what we really do is review applications. So
the permit
that
is,
facility had to submit an application. We have that, we review it, and then we create a legally binding document, which is their permit.
So if it's every 5 years, did they submit an application in 2015? So it's taken 4 years and you haven't...
So they have it, correct. They have a timely application.
So why does it take so long?
It takes so long because of our resource. We do not have the resources and have not had the resources to address minor sources.
Well, is this considered high priority since there's been so many complaints?
Now what's going on is one of the things that we can do in relooking at the situation because of the complaints, because of the concern, is we're going to assign resources specifically devoted to this.
I guess the question is, as far as enforcement, if you see this as a problem, I don't know exactly, I know you have to look at it more, but you've heard many complaints,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if you've measured how much dust and all that, but if you don't issue them a permit, they cannot operate, is that correct?
They're obligated to renew it.
Yeah, they don't, they get it.
Yeah.
If you're obligated to renew it, but you can't renew a, but you can't renew it if they're soot and dust is continuously coming out of there.
You're right that we can't issue a permit to a facility that we don't think can meet all the applicable requirements.
So they're allowed to continue operating and not?
So what we do is our process is to work with the facility to bring them back into compliance or to make sure that they meet all the requirements. We've got a couple tools as we look at their permit application. One of the things will, one of the ways we can start to address this from the department side is we'll relook at their application. We'll relook at, is the equipment that they put in there, are the control devices that they put in there, are they operating in accordance with what we actually think they are on paper, right? There appears to be right now a disconnect here.
Definitely.
So,
well, if that application came in 2014 for a 2015 renewal, that's before the storm, which
right.
we believe has caused a good portion of the
right.
problem.
So,
your application that you're dealing with is not current.
Needs to be revised, right. So that is one of the ways that is an effective tool that we can start. We're going to start down that path to go, okay, what's in this application? What are they actually doing? What's changed there that we need to take a second, we need to take a look at and use today's world, use today's operations, and review those to see, can they meet all the air standards? That's one piece of what we're doing. The other piece, and you've mentioned enforcement. So our enforcement process is about bringing facilities back into compliance. So we work with them to try to get them into compliance to be able to meet all the air regs. The DNR and the environmental quality, and for most of the programs, is really different than the police department or even the wardens. Right? We don't bring enforcement. What we do is we can allege a violation of a code or a permit requirement. That package then, we build a case, that package gets referred over to the Department of Justice. So it's the Department of Justice that then would work with them for a settlement, would levy any fines. And
so how long does this take then?
So
this has been going on for like 2 years.
An enforcement process depends on DOJ's schedule. You know, I can't speak to that. But what we can do is start to look at the things that they are doing and get some measurements.
To see if they're working and correcting the problem or not. And,
you know, it's really, what's tough about air is it's really different than water. It's different than something like a wastewater treatment plant where you can go and you can, you know, physically take a sample, take it to the lab and analyze it. We have that capability in air, but you have to do it out of the stack, which means bringing in a firm, setting up a situation and that is the like their worst case, and you get a point in time measurement of what the emissions are out of the stack. You know, we review a stack test plan at least 20 days in advance. So the company sets that up, and that is one of the tools that we're likely to use going forward to see, again, if what's going on there now fits what we think is in this application.
Well, these soot events aren't every day.
No.
Though.
Yeah.
So you'd really have to be on them for weeks.
So they're really, really difficult to catch, right? And opacity, the visual things you see, is even more difficult. That's a prescribed method. You know, you just went through the weights and measures method, right? Everything has a methodology. And it means having a certified reader read smoke, and it's prescribed like every 6 minutes you take a reading for a certain amount of time. So those little 30-second black smoke incidences are not likely to show up as an exceedance of their opacity limit. If they occur over an extended time, they might, but it's a really difficult measurement to pursue enforcement on.
So we have, it seems to me that, I mean, I could, maybe I'm wrong. But
yeah.
It seems to me that, and I've experienced it where I've felt, been different places where I felt particulates coming down. And I've seen automobiles that have it. The gentleman that just spoke, Could probably take pictures of particulates on his car and on his house and on his deck. So it seems to me that that'd be a pretty good reading in and of itself, you know, without having to go through all the, you know, going to the smokestack and doing this. And I mean, it's obvious something's happening. It's coming from somewhere, and the odds are probably coming out of that stack. And it probably shouldn't be. I mean, I'm not a DNR expert, but I would say odds are that when something's coming out of the air and landing on people and stuff, it's probably not a good thing. I'm just guessing, you know. And I don't know. It just seems to me that it's pretty simple that that should stop. And, you know, and I know you made the comment. I know you made the comment that you guys are underfunded and, you know, and overworked and those, whatever it was exactly what you said. But it just seems to me that everybody's in that position.
All kinds
of businesses out there work really hard. They work on a shoestring budget to try to get by and, you know, try to make their bottom line. So I'm not so sure that's a real good argument.
And I don't intend it as an argument or an excuse. But
fair enough.
It is a reality of why they have a, you know, 9-year-old permit.
It just seems to me that it's
after this, and what we can do moving forward is we've got we're going to be assigning a staff person,
okay,
and somebody that's got some knowledge of wood-fired boilers.
How soon do you anticipate that happening?
That's going to happen this week.
Cool,
very good,
nice.
And they can take a look at both the kind of compliance front, right? Can they comply with the things that are in their permit right now? What kind of tools do we have to be able to assess what's going on today? And then also, how do we look at revising that application? How do we bring this permit up to today's world?
Can he or she suggest what equipment that they could add or use or change to prevent this from happening if it's deemed that it's, well, that we feel obviously that it is an issue?
Yes, sort of, but we're not a consultant, right?
So if you find out, I guess, that they aren't in compliance, which we're suggesting that you will, then what, right, then what happens?
What they need to do is come up with a plan to get into compliance, and that might be they would go out, contract vendors, come up with control equipment, or do whatever.
Okay, they came up with a plan that was submitted to you May 31st that had to do with training their employees on how to fire up the boiler, I mean, for a layman. Okay, since they've done that, and I've talked to Steve and you heard him tonight, it hasn't done anything. So what are they? Are they just telling us things and then not doing it, or? I mean, it seems like all we hear is excuses and nothing changes. And that's the frustration we have.
Oh, good, yeah. I mean, we've got 2 years' worth of records now, right, and say, we're going to train somebody. We're going to do this. I ask them for, where's your pressure drop readings across your boilers or across your cyclones? Where's your pressure drop readings across your bag houses? They provide the information. They've always provided information in a timely manner. The obvious things that we do there isn't anything right now. They've responded timely. It's not effective. So we need to step this up to the next level.
Can I ask a question about the decibel level, too? You know, I mean, the gentleman that, you know, and he's been really respectful. Every time he comes to council, he's respectful about how he approaches it. And but he's getting, I don't blame him. I mean, if you traded places with him, lived in his house for a month, and he lived in yours, you probably get some idea of his frustration. And so, you know, what's the plan regarding the decibel level? I mean, obviously he's, you know, keeping an eye on that or an ear to it, I guess is a better way of putting it. But you know, what's kind of a plan do you have for that?
The Department of Natural Resources does not regulate. So
who does?
The state regulation. It might come from, is it getting at this? If you're looking at, there's local city, I don't know if you have a city ordinance on there's probably noise levels for OSHA, but that's going to be inside, interior to the plant.
I'm thinking public health.
That's not something that the legislature has given
us. How many years have you been in the position where you're at right now?
The position that I'm in currently, I've been in for not quite 4 years.
Okay. During that 4 year period of time, have there been any applications that were denied for renewal?
So I guess my last question would be, is this a unique problem in your area? I mean, is this something that you have to try to deal with in other locations as well?
Fortunately, I don't have to deal with this.
In the whole Northwest Wisconsin, you think this is maybe an isolated case or what?
For this size of industry, I have not had to deal with anything like this. I've been with the department for
And I think one of the reasons we asked that is that they, and again, this is maybe just a comment, not a question, that they said, well, if we could come up with an answer equipment to both issues, sound and so, we'd certainly, you know, put in a capital request. I mean, they've invested money in other capital projects. So, again, that kind of adds to the frustration level. I mean, there's got to be someone out there that's smarter than I am that knows how to take care of this problem, and they should be able to, within 2 years, have that done.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we're looking at their permit and looking at can they comply with the limits that are in their current permit and the current statute is the place that we'll start.
Anybody else?
The only thing I have is when it comes down to the particulates that are floating through the air, whether it be the soot, wood particles, sound, that is something that you don't deal with. It's really strange. I mean,
so the noise level, particulate matter, yes. Carbon monoxide out of there, yes. Formaldehyde out of there, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So their permit has emissions for all of those. And they have requirements for maintaining what's called good combustion practices. It doesn't seem like that those are being maintained only the kind of emissions you are seeing and experiencing if you felt with water.
I know the particulates that they're emitting on the old railroad trestle that's right behind their building. They use it now for fishing. It's a walking trail, biking trail. I have pictures here of the railing full of soot particles.
So in that other direction.
Mm-hmm. South, just south. We did have a plan this spring to send a drone up to take a picture of the snow as it melted on the lake around the building, but that fell through because we had a heavy rainstorm that wiped everything out, so that kind of blew that.
Yeah.
Did have a plan of attack, but it didn't work. But I do have pictures. I'm sure Mr. Brown has pictures of particulate. I mean, it's sawdust in the cracks of the sidewalks, and the thing is, it's not the manufacturer that I'm worried about. It's the people that are walking down the street breathing it in, and what's next? You know, lawsuits for lung cancer dedicated to them, or... That's where we're going.
Do folks here contact the facility directly and report?
Say that again, please.
Do you know if people here contact the facility directly?
I think he's tried. He has tried several times. They don't return his call.
Okay. Is that something that's sometimes helpful? At least then they can't use the reasoning that they don't know.
He's been here.
He's been to our meetings a couple times. We've asked him similar questions, and we get the answers I think that you get, but it doesn't seem to solve the problem. That's the frustration. No, he's aware of it. He's here, and he wants to be a good neighbor, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It's been 2 years. So that's...
So I think, you know, we've been doing the same thing. We've been asking questions. We've been asking for information. We've been asking for the data. They submit those responsibly and in a timely manner, but it doesn't seem to be alleviating the problem. We need to have a level of attention that we can do.
So next week you're going to start...
Yeah. So the question, how would you like the department to communicate back to the council?
Yeah, it'd be great to come back to the council when you have some information.
Okay.
That'd be super.
Maybe right now...
if you could give me a monthly report, I could...
Okay.
Slip.
Yeah, so right now,
to the council.
The mayor and I exchange emails whenever I get a complaint. So, and I would encourage anybody in the community, if there's complaints, they can go to whoever, right? And they should come to the department. It always helps us to know if something's going on. We really count on the eyes and ears of everybody.
So any chance in a month you could come back here and give us some kind of a report?
Sure.
That would be great, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of grant program out there where we can move the industry someplace else?
And then you kind of move up to the north box.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other, you know, the DNR doesn't get it, you know.
I'm just saying, you know, right.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. You know.
If you want me to leave some copies of my cards if people want to get.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll just leave them up here.
And Kathy, and you can
pass
Kathy.
Well.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item up is a 2018 audit report.
Your Honor, the minutes will just reflect no council action taken Perfect. On this topic.
Thank you.
Hey, good evening. My name is Dan Toll, and I'm with the firm of Clifton Larson Allen, and I'm the principal in our Rice Lake office. I think a few days ago you were delivered a draft of the audit report, and today the final version arrived. But what we'd like to do this evening is just go over some highlights of the numbers and such that are in the large report. So on the screen we have if we can just go to item number one there, it talks about the auditor's report. We used to refer to that as auditor's opinion, but even things in accounting change. So in the financial statements then for the year ended 12/31/2018 that we have issued and you have earned an unmodified opinion on those financial statements. And it doesn't say anything about if the numbers are good or bad, but what it tells the reader that the city of Rice Lake follows what's called generally accepted accounting principles for recording and reporting on its financial transactions. And in that opinion, there's a paragraph this year as far as a new GAAP procedure that was recommended to be implemented, which you did. And so we have a restatement paragraph in there as far as the effects of that statement. And that had to do with the implementation of the state life insurance program. The other note results refers, I should say, to the Tourism Commission as far as the 2018 activity of the commission is not included in the report, but it is the goal then to have that included in the 2019 report. There needs to be some updating of the records there that makes that where we can pull that into the report and continue with your unmodified opinion. The second talks about management letter there. And inside your booklet, I believe, there's a two-page letter that addresses 3 points. And just one thing to remember about that letter, that the bark is much worse than the bite on that. We're setting forth some situations in which the reporting under GAAP and making various adjustments to your book under GAAP, and then also to get the report, the full audit report, into that GAAP compliance. And as we talked about a little earlier in the Finance Committee, unfortunately, the way that the state of Wisconsin requires that you record your transactions and report them in the annual report to the state does not strictly follow GAAP. Actually, it deviates from that. And so you are forced so to, you know, keep two sets of books, as we talk about, your regular set of books, your governmental type, and then also those for the GAAP. And then we help convert your non-GAAP statements to GAAP, and so you can get this unmodified opinion, which is very important as far as your bond rating and also if any grant application. So that just covers kind of procedures. Let's look at some numbers. And, of course, item number two there, the general fund, and that is just your working fund. Any transactions that are not required to be recorded or reported in one of the other funds automatically defaults to this general fund. And we have a condensed balance sheet there for the 4-year period ending December 31st, 2018. We'll just cruise down through those the 2018 numbers there. The first column, cash and investments, that's self-explanatory. That's green dollar bills that you have in the bank. Taxes receivable, again, I hope that, you know, that's explains it itself, where that would be the 2018 taxes, which you have real estate taxes and personal property that you have the option of paying on by December 31st of 2018 or in 2019. The advances to other funds were that would be loans to other funds, and we see we do not have any of those at 2018. We move down to other receivables. That's special assessments, amounts that you had advanced to the tax incremental districts to pay their bills, and also some amounts due from the utilities. The utilities pay taxes just like everyone else in the city, and if I remember right, I think it was about $509,000 that they would have owed, so to speak, at 12/31, and then paid in the year 2019. So if we took your cash, collected your receivables, you would have had then that $5,990,610. You did have some bills to pay, and that's the $313,000. And then we have what's called deferred revenues or inflows, and that's a concept that's maybe a little tougher to follow or understand, but that would be revenues or inflows that you have a legal title to at that date, but you're not going to realize them until after December 31st. And again, the classic would be the real estate taxes. They're lien on the property December 31st, but the cash and the revenues actually flow in 19. And also would be any type of delinquent taxes and special assessments. So in that liability category, then, we have that $3,035,000. If we took the $5.9 million that we had up there in the in cash and receivables, and you paid your unpaid bills at the end of the year, and then they would have set aside for those deferred revenues, we'd have what we call fund balance. And so it's obviously just the difference between the assets and the liabilities, and that is the $2,955,196. But we want to break that down just a little further to see how much you actually had then as working capital at December 31st. And if we go up that fund balance and the first number there, the $40,896, and that would be, it's called non-spendable, and that is delinquent taxes that people have not paid. And I think it's a we can make good reasoning that if they hadn't paid them by December 31st, they're not going to pay them on January the 1st. And so we set that aside, so to speak, as a non-spendable amount. Then we have assigned $255,275. That's the amount that you as the council, when you adopted the 2019 budget, set aside in this general fund balance or money on hand at the end of 18 to offset or help on the 2019 budget. So, again, we say that's not readily available because you have already assigned it to a specific purpose. That brings us down to the magic number, so to speak, that we're looking for as far as the general fund, and it's on the shady line there, the $2,659,025. So that's then your working capital at the end of the year, which, of course, you use to pay bills during the first months of 2019, or to use as projects may come up during the year 2019 that are not included in your budget, where you can move money then, transfer from this unassigned category to an assigned. And the question always comes up is that in that unassigned, kind of what should that number be? And, of course, you know, we definitely wanted a positive number. And the rule of thumb, and it goes way back to case law from a case in 1929 that the courts have ruled if you have less, 33% or less in this unassigned balance, you do not have surplus funds on hand. And, you know, the statutes say that all surplus funds shall be returned to the taxpayer. It's just, I mean, it's that plain. And, of course, you do that by reducing a subsequent year's tax levy. So if you go down to the where it says percent of unassigned fund balance to your general fund expenditures, and you see we're at 37.2%, and that was down from 39 and 41.39, so you're actually kind of right above that that so-called threshold. The bottom is the bond raters and that like it to be at least 20%, and if you fall below 20%, and then you go to sell bonds or whatever, of course your rating would be less. The interest rates would be higher, and you may be required to buy insurance on your debt. So how did you get to that unassigned balance? Well, we can look right there, the general fund, the operating summary, what happened during the year, and we see that you had revenues of $6.4 million, expenditures of $7.1. You had other financing sources or uses, that $556,000, all except, if I remember right, $600 of that would be the taxes that the utilities paid to the general fund. So you had a net then outflow of $189,000 for the year. So on a $6.4 million budget or $7.1, that's remarkably close then. You're $189,000. We talked about the where you were at, the percentage there, the 37.2. And why did the courts, why did they say Okay, you can carry over money. And, of course, they realize that your revenues do not come in 12 nice equal installments, like on the 5th of each month. And actually, your shared revenues from the state, you do not receive those until November 15th. You do not receive 85% of those until November 15th. And that is, what, $1,443,000. So obviously, you know, if you started the year with no working with capital, you would need to borrow money to pay bills in January and February. So, again, that's the reason why you're allowed to carry over balances. And as we see here, yours is, you know, right at the top of that threshold. So that's a summary of, again, the general fund. And, again, that's kind of the default fund or your working fund for the city. If we go to item number three, we talk about special revenue funds. And special revenue funds are where either maybe a grant agreement or a city ordinance or a resolution will say that you will account for specific activities in a special revenue fund where the revenues are be used only for the expenses of that fund. And you can read down through the community development block grant, airport, mass transit, cable commission, library, community enhancement fund, which is such things as your subsidy net, the swimming pool, senior citizens, tourism, the bid district, and the hotel motel taxes accounted for in that community enhancement, your street lighting recovery, your stormwater utility and waste management. And as we come down through there, what you'll look for and hope that you don't see, not only there but any place in the report, is a number in parentheses, which mean be an overdraft or a unfavorable position. But as you see here, that these are all then with a positive fund balance. Item number four, debt service. And this is where you're setting aside money to pay future principal and interest on the debt. And you see there you had $314,000 available there at 12/31. Capital projects, item number five, are building projects, of which you generally issue debt to fund those projects. And you see what's listed here. You had your capital improvements fund and on down to the regional airport, the library renovation, aquatic center, and tax district or TID number two. And number three, the tax incremental district, and you see number three there, head parentheses, or an overdraft of $335,000. And that's kind of an exception to what I had just said as far as what you hope you don't see is numbers in parentheses or brackets. But so because of their very nature, a tax incremental district, it generally has an overdraft until it has all its bills paid. And, of course, then if there's no more eligible projects, the tax incremental district is closed out. And, of course, those revenues become available then to all the taxing entities. So there in number five, we see then you have about $5.5 million set aside for ongoing building projects. On number six, permanent funds, and you have two here, the library fund and the senior citizens fund. In a permanent fund is where you can spend only the principal or the corpus of the fund. You cannot spend that. You can spend only the earnings of the fund. And so of that, well, for each of those funds, the corpus was $50,000, and the earnings obviously were the difference in between the $50,000 and the $54,000 and the $52,000. Enterprise funds, number seven, that's the utilities. And this now here we're moving over to a full accrual accounting as is governed. Your electric department, water department are regulated by the Public Service Commission, Your wastewater is not. That is under full city, control as far as the rate setting. And so I'll take a quick look here at each of the three. For the electric, we'll actually kind of go down through there and so you can get the how to read these. So current assets on the electric there, the $6.2 million. And so current assets in this case would be cash and receivables. So the measurement stick here is that cash and receivables, is that amount enough to pay your current bills? So if you go down to liabilities payable with current assets, you'll see that was $1.3 million. And, of course, the large one would be the power bill in there for and would have been paid in January. So if we go down to the first bold line where it says current ratio, 1 plus desired, is we just want to see, again, that if you have enough cash to pay your bills. And so they could have paid their bills 4.51 times. So the reader of this or the bond people would be, very happy to know that on the short term anyway, that the utility is solvent. Go back up to the current assets or up to the assets here where it says Wisconsin or WRS or Wisconsin Retirement System assets and deferred outflows. The $294,661. Now, this is an asset that you're probably never going to, you're never going to realize this in cash. And as the Wisconsin Retirement System is one of the few in the nation that is fully funded. And in the year, our year ended December 31st, 2018, it was funded at 103, I think it was 0.92%. So, in theory, then, if it dissolved, your portion of the billions of dollars they have in there would be for the electric department would be $294,661, and so again, an asset that you probably won't realize, and if it could turn to a liability. If the funding fell below the 100% level. Going down to capital assets, the $9.5 million, that's the depreciated value of the electric utility. So you take the substations, the poles, it goes on, the lighting system, on and on, the meters and everything. And if someone said to you, we'll buy your electric or utility for electric department, for its book value, you'd say, okay, we want $9,506,000. Now, the one thing that we note here and is very kind of unusual that you had no debt against those assets, that the electric department is obviously debt-free. So, and the bottom section there, the net position, the invested in capital assets, again, that's the identical number that we've seen up above because there's no debt. And then reserve for the Wisconsin Retirement System that we've seen up above, 193,000. So the $4,621,000 is the accumulated profits of the electric utility since you started the utility. And through the sale, it has generated then the profits of $4.6 million. The what happened during 2018, and if we go down where it says 2018 operating income, and you see that was $1,016,000, and that was up by up from 577,000 of 1 year earlier. And then the change in net position, the difference between the operating income and change, you would add the interest income, subtract the interest expense, and add back the subtract out the taxes that it pays over to the general fund. The rate of return on as far as the, you see the large increase in revenues. Actually, there was $1 million increase in revenues for the electric utility in the year 2018. But to offset that a little bit, there was a $500,000 increase in the cost of purchase power. So we'd net those out, for just on the power then a portion, you'd have a plus flow inflow of $500,000 for the year. The rate of return, as I mentioned, that your electric department, water department are regulated by the Public Service Commission, the rates. They have a formula that in order to pay your operation and maintenance expense, to pay any debt service expense you may have, and set aside dollars for replacement of assets as they wear out, you have a rate of return of 5.5 or above. And you'll see there we went from in 2017 from 3% up to 8. And of course the date of the last rate adjustment there was October 1st of 2017. So 2018 was the first full year then of the effects of that change, and of course it was an increase in rates. So and of course that, as we noticed coming down through there, greatly improved the income then of the electric department. We just go over to the water department. Then we're not going to read down through those numbers. If we can just go to the dark number there, that current ratio, could they pay their bills? Yes. They had cash and had on hand. They could pay their bills in the short run. They're 3.57 times. And then we look down at the operating income. It was $520,000, up from $309,000 of 1 year earlier. And then the change in net position, $283,000, up from $90,000. So their rate of return for the year ended then 2018 was at 4.66, and up from 2.1, and they had a rate adjustment in July of 2017. So again, 2018 was the first full year then of those. So they had an increase then in of tariff revenues or of rates, of money coming in from you, the users, of $227,000 from that rate increase, whereas their expenses only increased $16,000 from 17 to 18. The water utility does have a little long-term debt, but of the water utility, the capital assets there, that $9,221,000, only $490,000 of debt against the water utility. If we move over to the far right column, now the wastewater, and we see their current assets are about $3.8 million, bills to pay $75,000. So we go down to the current ratio, and you can see they could pay their bills 50 times. And then on their backup on the capital assets, that $11 million invested in the, again, depreciated value of the wastewater system, again, no debt against the wastewater. And we can see what happened if we go down to the 2018 operating income, $955,000, up from $326,000 a year earlier, and the change in net position then of from $322,017 to $978,000 in 18. Rate of return, we got non-applicable in there. Again, the rate's not regulated by Public Service Commission, but by you as the council and the utility commission. The date of the last rate adjustment then for wastewater is January 1st of 2010. And so you're probably thinking, okay, Why did we have such a good year, so to speak, in 2018? Their revenues were up $415,000, and while their expenses were actually down $214,000. So we have a swing there, what, $650,000 or so on the income. Revenues up because of some agreements you have as far as treating leachate and also from waste haulers. And again, that is not, you know, rate revenue or tariff revenue. You know, that's revenue that's here today, you know, could be gone tomorrow because there's some of the neighboring municipalities' treatment plant cannot handle what yours can, so it's trucked in. And of course, what also follows with the trucks is the money. And so that was the largest reason and for the increase in the wastewater. We go to number eight debt against that the city has. There's really two types of debt. The GO debt, which is backed by the taxing power of the city. When you issue debt, you promise that, yes, we will levy taxes to pay that debt. And you'll see there your general obligation debt was $17 million, and up from $1 million from the year before. And you can see there the previous years. The monitor here is, if we can go down to the very bottom row, in Wisconsin, municipalities can have up to 5% of their equalized valuation in debt. School districts can have 10, but everybody else it's 5. So where you stood, you see your equalized value there, the $706 million, your total limit that you could have had in debt was $35 million, and you had 17, so you're at 48% of your debt limit. So, again, you know, very good situation as we come down through there. You can read down through the rest of it. Oh, that tax incremental one, that 3.7, that's payable then only out of the revenues of the TID district. It's not pledged by taxes. So as TID number 3 starts generating surplus revenues, there will be, you know, payments on that debt. You had capital lease for a truck, a dump truck. And then you can read down on through the various obligations you have to employees that if, again, now in theory, the city stopped operating on December 31st in accordance with the labor agreements that you have, you know, there's accumulated vacation, sick leave, comp time, early retirement, and you can read, you know, what those are. And we get down to business type activities there, and again, the mortgage revenue bonds. All you had is that $490,000, again, the water, electric and wastewater debt-free. And then the utilities also, then their employees, have some obligations as accrued vacation, sick leave, and other post-employment benefits. So total outstanding obligations into the city at 12/31/18, $23,945,000. That's a quick run through of the major points. After you have time to look at the more detailed report, have questions, don't be afraid to contact us and that, or the Finance Committee, and we'd be glad to discuss that individually with any of the council members or as a group or whatever. So questions from the council or comments?
Yeah, could you just, we talked a little bit in the Finance Committee. One of the questions that the council has had is, as you know, we talked about coming in earlier and you said a couple of things in finance that, you know, one was that if something came up, you'd let us know about it sooner. And then in order to get everything from 2018, can you just comment briefly on that?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the timing of the audit, the delivery of the report. And, of course, number Number one, you know, is the availability of the records, the amounts, and that doesn't you know, reflect on you know, your people or anything, but just the physical ability or availability of some of that information. We talked about various payments on contracts. You do not, you know, get that information maybe until mid-February or something like, you know, to that. On the utilities, they have, of course, they need to report to the Public Service Commission, as we have noted here a couple times. They have a large report that is due on April 1st. And then the General City has a report due to the Department of Revenue, and all of your transportation aids and other state aids are based on those numbers, that report. And that is a May 15th report. And so the, you know, theoretically or, you know, the probably the very earliest a report could be, you know, available maybe towards, you know, the very end of April, the very first part of May, you know, to get, you know, everything pulled together and that. So, you know, we do come in, you know, before that. Sometimes we can do, you know, preliminary field work with some things that are ready. And actually, since the utilities report is due the state earlier, we do the, you know, the field work there before City Hall. But you know, rest assured that when we do get in, if we see problems, you will be the first to know. You will know it way before you get the final you know, report. We can issue what we call an interim management letter and say, okay, you have some problems that we need to deal with now, and not wait for 30 days or 45 days or something like that. So, and I think, you know, we're always in direct communication. You know, we're a couple hundred feet away here across from where our office is. So answer your question, Jim?
Yep. Thank you.
Anybody else? That's good, Dan. Thank you.
I think it was what we suggested for the Finance Committee, that we just, Kathy would put this on the consent agenda next time, so it gives everybody a chance to look at this.
Yeah.
So if there's any questions, you can pull it down. They'll have a representative in the office. So tonight we'll just table it or just
the minutes,
not?
The minutes tonight would reflect no council action taken.
The next meeting.
And the item would be on June 25th.
So you guys can take a look at it if you have questions, and you can bring them up next time.
Yeah, good suggestion.
Okay.
I guess since Kurt and the fire chief are gone, maybe we should table that last one. I don't know.
Probably not a bad idea.
A number of questions, especially for the chief.
And Kurt as well. So I guess I'd make that motion since neither one of them are available. You guys have seen the information anyway, but that we table, which would be what?
5C.
5C until the next meeting.
Second.
I'd second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to table item 5C until the next meeting at the end of this month.
Yep.
All in favor, or roll call.
Councilmember Dodge.
Yes.
Edwardson.
Yes.
O'Brien.
Yes.
Lundberg.
Yes.
Lawler.
Yes.
Lawrence.
Yes.
Schwamm.
Yes.
Okay. The motion carries. Any council comments?
Yeah, I'd like to put on the next agenda that you're here, Arnie, which would be, what, the first meeting in July, a discussion of the possible enforcement that the city could take with Burchard Manufacturing, some sort of plan. I mean, we've talked about public nuisance. We've talked about different things. I'd just like a discussion on that from the city. I think you've been looking into that anyway.
Yes, I have been. As a matter of fact, I sent the mayor a somewhat garbled opinion. It's a very tough area of the law. The mayor's indicated that he's going to share that with everybody so that the next time I'm here, we could discuss that letter. There's unfortunately...
Yeah, okay. I haven't absorbed all myself yet.
So let's put it on the agenda. Would that be the first meeting in July?
Yes.
That you'd be here? Okay. So I don't know if we need a second for that or...
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and second to put that on the first meeting in July.
Unfortunately, it's not a clear area of the law.
Okay, well, at least we can talk about it and
about
see
the
where
same
we're
color
at.
As the dust circle.
Yeah, really.
All right, anybody else for council comments? Okay, there is a closed session this evening. Is there a motion to go into closed session?
Move we go into closed session.
Read the whole thing.
Oh, jeez. Where is it?
Oh, yeah. I can put it up on the screen.
Okay, I make a motion convening to closed session pursuant to Wisconsin 19.85 1F.
Oh.
Concerning financial, medical, social, or personal history, disciplinary data of specified preliminary consideration of specific personnel problems. Or the investigation of charges against specific persons, except where paragraph B applies, which, if discussed in public, would be likely to have a substantial adverse effect upon the reputation of a person referred to it in such histories, data, or involved in such problems or investigations. A, independent investigation of the Human Services Department, harassment, complaint.
Is there a second?
Second.
Yeah. We have a motion and second to convene in closed session. All in favor say aye. Are you aye. Roll call?
Roll call.
Okay.
Councilmember Edwardson.
Yes.
O'Brien.
Yes.
Lundberg.
Yes.
Lawler.
Yes.
Dorrance.
Yes.
Schwab.
Yes.
And Dodge.
Yes.
Yeah. We are in closed session.